Well, you'll be aware that over the last four weeks, we've been looking at one particular series. We've been looking at what we call big issues, and we've looked at the environment. Michael helped us think about that. Then we looked at justice. And last Sunday, we looked at the issue of war. And today, the question is, would Jesus make poverty history? It was back in 2005 that a whole series of charities and agencies came together in a campaign called Make Poverty History. The object of that coming together was, first of all, to highlight the issue of poverty and then to encourage governments and individuals to do something about it. The reality is, folks, that the facts about poverty are both shocking and scandalous. In our world today, 1.7 billion people live in absolute poverty. There are two different kinds of poverty. There's relative poverty. That's where people are poorer than others by comparison within the country or the culture in which they live. And you could say that about some of the folks who live in the United Kingdom, that they live in relative poverty. But there's also absolute poverty. People who, by any measurement, are poor. 1.7 billion people in the world fall into that category. Every single day, 50,000 people die of poverty-related causes. And because they are poverty-related causes, these are needless deaths. 50,000 people every single day. That's one every 1.7 seconds. Every year, 11 million children die in poverty before their fifth birthday. And poverty never oppresses on its own. It always brings its friends along with it. For example, one of those friends is hunger. Tonight, this night, and every night, 1.02 billion people will go to bed hungry. Also, it brings with it homelessness. Over 100 million children in our world live on the streets. They have no parents. They have no place to call home. They live on the streets of major cities, and they are in severely vulnerable situations. 100 million. So how poor are the poorest people on earth? The World Bank estimates that 2.7 billion people in the world live on less than $2 a day. $2 is roughly £1.20. Every morning, I stop in the Maxwell Garage on the Antrim Road to buy two newspapers for my father-in-law, the Daily Mail and the Belfast Telegraph, and they cost £1.20. And that's just loose change in my pocket. And 2.7 billion people in the world are living on that, £1.20 every day. That's the measure of poverty. Now, it's true that poverty rates have been falling in our world, in every area across the world. But sub-Saharan Africa, the part of Africa that lies below the Sahara Desert, is still by some considerable distance the poorest part of the planet and way behind the rest of the world. However, poverty is no respecter of persons and no respecter of countries. The Joseph Rowntree Foundation estimates that in the United Kingdom, 2.8 million children live in poverty in our own country. And persistent poverty in the UK is at its highest proportionately in Northern Ireland. These are the facts of poverty. The question is, does Jesus care? Does Jesus care? Would Jesus make poverty history? I want to help you think about this in three different ways. First thing I think we need to observe about Jesus and this question is this. Jesus knew that God cared about the poor. From his earliest days, Jesus learned the scriptures. At his mother's knee as he was growing up in the synagogue as a boy, where he would have been trained for coming out as an adult, and during that time he would have had to memorize large parts of the scripture. Jesus studied these things and understood them. In fact, he knew enough of the Bible by the time he was 11 years old. He had enough understanding to engage with the theological teachers in the temple when his parents thought he was somewhere else with his relatives on the way back home. And Jesus learned a number of things from his Bible study. From Deuteronomy chapter 15 in particular, he learned, first of all, in verse 4, "There need be no poor among you," God said, "for in the land the Lord your God is giving you to possess, he will richly bless you." First thing that Jesus learned was that there was no need for poverty, for God had made provision for everyone's need. That wasn't just true of Palestine in Jesus' day or of Palestine in the days when the Israelites first traveled into it. It is true of the world in our generation. There is literally enough food in the world to feed everyone. There are enough resources for the earth's population. They just don't get shared around. Jesus knew that there was no need for poverty. Secondly, he knew that its existence was to have both a negative and a positive effect. Here's the negative effect. Deuteronomy 15, nowward verse 7. "If anyone is poor among your people, do not be hard-hearted or tight-fisted." It could have been written for people living near Ballymena. God said that the first problem about poverty is we have a negative reaction to it. We close our fists and we seal our wallets. And God is saying to the Israelites in Deuteronomy, you mustn't do that. You must not be hard-hearted or tight-fisted. And then he puts the same thing positively in verse 11. "There will always be poor people in the land." Even though there shouldn't be, there will be. "Therefore, I command you to be open-hearted towards those of your people who are poor and needy in your land." So don't close up your fists and seal your wallets, but open your hearts, God said, to those who find themselves in these situations. You might say, well, why did God need to say that? God does need to say that. I remember in my last congregation, I worked with a couple of families. They were single-parent families. And we got some help for them through the Presbyterian Orphan Society and in a couple of other ways. And I used to call in their homes quite often. And I used to hear some of the leaders of the church going on about how these people were to blame for their own circumstances and they were never as badly off as they seemed. I saw their homes. They had nothing. And God had to say to people, look, don't let yourself get caught by that judgmental attitude that says the poor got themselves poor. I command you to be open-hearted towards those of your people who are poor and needy in your land. And Jesus not only learned that God was commanding this, but he learned from Leviticus that God had made provision for the poor. It wasn't just words, it was also actions. Because it said in Leviticus, God says, "When you reap the harvest of your land, do not reap to the very edges of your field or gather the gleanings of your harvest, leave them for the poor." God said, "Don't strip the field bare. Leave some of what you grow so that the poor can eat." And Jesus not only learned that the Father had made provision for the poor, but he learned that the Father had a heart for the poor. In Isaiah chapter 3, we read this, "The Lord enters into judgment against the elders and leaders of his people. It is you who have ruined my vineyard," God says. "The plunder from the poor is in your houses. What do you mean by crushing my people and grinding the faces of the poor?" You cannot read those words and not hear the anger in the heart of God. You have no right to some of the things that you possess because you stole them from the poor. You have no right to crush my people and grind the faces of the poor. Jesus understood that God, his Father, cared about the poor. It was on the surface of the scriptures that he knew so well. And so when Jesus came to see his own ministry as in some sense being for the poor. Because in the first sermon Jesus ever preached in the synagogue at Nazareth, he quotes from Isaiah chapter 61 verse 1 these words, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me," Jesus says, "because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor." Jesus characterizes his earthly ministry as in some sense, he goes on to say other things about it as well, of course. But one of the things he says that will characterize that ministry is that he comes to proclaim good news to the poor. Jesus realized that you won't understand God unless you understand that God cares about the poor. God cares. Second thing we discover is that Jesus taught about the poor. We find that Jesus not only came for the poor, amongst others, but he taught his contemporaries about the poor. 25 times in the Gospels, the poor feature in the narrative, especially in the Gospel of Luke, where it comes up 11 times. And there we see that Jesus does a number of things. Chiefly, Jesus ennobles the poor. There is a story in Luke chapter 21 that you will know. It is the story of a poor widow, that's how she's described, who comes into the temple to give an offering to God. And into the offering plate, she places two small coins. And two things stand out about that moment. The first one is this, that Jesus praises her offering. Jesus says that this woman, this poor woman who put these two small coins into the offering plate, gave more than everyone else, even though her offering was a fraction of a penny. These coins were so small, you would barely have wanted to count them. They were a fraction of a penny, yet Jesus said they were more than everything that everyone else had given. Why was that? Because she had given everything she had. She was pathetically poor, profoundly poor. Yet she gave all she had, these two tiny coins, in worship to God. And Jesus praises her offering and said it was a more valuable gift than everything else put into the plate. And Jesus wasn't being sentimental here. You know, he wasn't just trying to be nicey-nicey. He was stating a fact from the perspective of God. This woman gave more. He praises her offering, but also, secondly, perhaps most amazingly of all, Jesus accepts her offering. He allows her to give it. He didn't step into the queue and say, whoa, hold on a wee minute, don't give those two coins. You need them more than I do. He didn't do that. Because she matters, and so does her gift. It was all she had to give. She needed to have the opportunity to give it. Why she wanted to give this offering to God, we don't know. What her circumstances were, what experiences she had been through, why there was some sense of joy in her heart that made her feel to herself, although this is all I have, I need to give it to God. And God said, okay, thank you, I accept the gift. Jesus ennobled the poor. The poor became important. That offering was just as important as every other offering that went into the plate that day. And to indicate that, God had to receive it. Jesus ennobles the poor. But not only so, he calls on people to make provision for them. We could spend all day looking at this because Luke's gospel is full of it, just to look at one of the gospels. But here are some of the things that you find there. For example, in Luke chapter 11 and verse 41, Jesus is addressing Pharisees. And he says to them, you must be generous to the poor. Then in Luke chapter 12, just the next chapter in verse 33, Jesus is talking to his followers about worry. And he said, you mustn't be worried about things because God is able to care for you. And because you know God cares for you, you can sell your possessions and give to the poor. And then in Luke chapter 14, Jesus is talking to wealthy people and telling some parables. And in the teaching, he says that the wealthy should feed the poor and not their friends. He says, you've got a lot of money, you're going to throw a big party. What do? You invite your friends. Why do you invite your friends? Because they'll invite you back for a party next week. And on the party season goes. Don't do that, Jesus said. Have your party, but invite the people who are poor and can't invite you back. The wealthy should feed the poor. And then in Luke chapter 18, there is the story, the famous story of the rich young ruler. And something amazing happens here that maybe we don't always see. Because you remember when Jesus talks to him and you know, he asks, what do I have to do? And Jesus says about the commandments. And he said, but I've kept all those things. And Jesus said, okay, there's just one thing you need to do. You need to go and sell everything you have, and then you need to come and follow me. But it's interesting what Jesus told him to do with what he had. Because this man was part of a family. Somebody else could have taken over his inheritance. Jesus wasn't just saying to him, leave your money behind and come with me. Jesus was saying, don't leave your money behind. Don't give it to anybody. Sell everything you have and give your wealth to the poor. Jesus was disinheriting him. And no one else was going to get the inheritance in place of him. He was going to give it all away. It's an amazing thing Jesus did. It not only impoverished him, but potentially it would have impoverished his family. Sell it, give it to the poor. And then in chapter 19, he meets Zacchaeus, the wealthy chief tax collector in the city of Jericho. And there's that amazing story where Jesus confronts him, and the guy's up the tree. You know, here he is, this key civil servant, like a total embarrassment and all the rest of it. And he comes down, Jesus goes to his house, and Zacchaeus realizes that somebody loves him. He didn't think anybody did, but he realizes God does. So what does he say? Immediately, voluntarily, without Jesus saying anything to him, he says, I'll give 50% of all I have. I'll give it away right now to the poor. Over and over again, it's like a theme that keeps coming up through the gospel record. Jesus tells people, you have money, you need to give a proportion, and in some cases, all of that money to help the poor. On one occasion, Jesus, however, seems dismissive in his approach. You remember the story of the woman who comes to Jesus to worship him with the expensive bottle of perfume, and she breaks the perfume, and the aroma fills the house, and some of the disciples who are there berate the woman for what she did. They realize that the perfume is worth a year's wages, and they say, what a scandalous waste to break open the bottle and pour it all out at one go. You know, it's worth a year's wages. You should have sold the bottle of perfume and given the money to the poor. And Jesus says this strange phrase, the poor you will always have with you, and you can help them anytime you want, but you will not always have me. And sometimes when we read those verses, we feel that Jesus is somehow being dismissive of the poor. Ah, the poor are always there. You can give them whenever you want. We don't understand that Jesus is quoting there. That first expression, the poor you will always have with you. I read you the quote a few moments ago. It comes from Deuteronomy chapter 15, verse 11. What is the context of the quote? Jesus said, or the author of Deuteronomy 15:11 says that God says that the poor you have always with you, therefore you must be open-hearted to the poor. Who was open-hearted in the room that day? Was it the Pharisee in whose house Jesus was eating, you know? Who didn't even give him the common courtesies that people did when you had a guest in your house? Was it his disciples who were so upset and scandalized by the woman who broke the bottle of perfume and poured it all out in one go over Jesus' feet, even though it was worth a fortune? Or was it this woman who took the most valuable thing she had, lavished it on Jesus? She was the open-hearted one and the most likely one in the room to have remembered the poor, actually. You can't be with Jesus and not realize that alleviating poverty is part of the mission. Jesus did it himself. How do I know that? Because there's no specific verse in the New Testament that mentions it. Here's how I know it. Jesus is in the upper room on the last night of his earthly ministry before he goes to trial on the cross. And he and his disciples are sharing together the meal. We're going to be sharing together here in church tonight. And after they've shared the meal, he turns to Judas, one of his disciples, and he says, go and do what you need to do quickly. And Judas leaves. And in John's gospel, we read that when he said that, the disciples didn't think to themselves, oh, he's going to go and betray the Lord. What they thought was, because Judas was the treasurer of the group, that either Jesus had told him to go and pay some bills or told him to go and give some money to the poor. Why would they assume that if that hadn't been something that Jesus regularly did with the meager resources at his disposal? He gave to the poor so that when Judas left that night, they thought that's what he was going to do. You cannot belong with Jesus to understand that Jesus taught about the poor, and he said that keeping the poor, looking after the poor, is part of the ministry. And the last thing is this, Jesus became poor. Jesus took a step beyond what we've already said. He understood the Father's care for the poor. He understood that from the scriptures. He had learned it since he was a boy. And also, he realized that helping the poor was part of the ministry, and he encouraged everyone whom he could to get involved in that ministry. But he took a step even beyond those two things. Jesus became poor himself. For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sake he became poor, so that you through his poverty might become rich. And this is an amazing text. It's a glorious text. It's one of the greatest texts in the scripture to describe what Jesus actually did, you know. But one of the problems about it is we sentimentalize it. Well, we call it spiritualizing it, but basically what we do is we sentimentalize it, you know. We think, oh, isn't that lovely? Jesus made himself poor. And if we understand it in any way at all, it might be in spiritual terms. We say, well, Jesus gave up heaven for earth. That's how he made himself poor. Now, Jesus gave up an unbroken fellowship with the Father for the battle to trust in God. That was the reality of his earthly ministry as an adult male, trying to figure out what God wanted him to do and trusting God, even to the point that he would offer up his life on the cross in the sure and certain hope that his Father wouldn't leave him to corruption in the grave, but would raise him again. And he had to struggle with that battle all his days, having given up the unbroken fellowship of eternity, having given up the praise of the angels and the archangels who forever were before his face from all eternity crying, holy, holy, holy is the Lord God of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory. He gave up that praise for the judgment that was Calvary. Not just the judgment of men, but the judgment of his Father. And all this is true. Jesus gave up all those riches and took upon himself all that poverty for you and for me. But as well as that, he did become poor. Jesus' parents were poor. We read in Luke chapter 2, Joseph and Mary took Jesus to Jerusalem to offer a sacrifice in keeping with what is said in the law of the Lord, a pair of doves or two young pigeons. That was a sacrifice that you had to make after a certain period of time when a boy was born into your home. And Joseph and Mary went to the temple with Jesus to make the sacrifice. And they made the sacrifice that the law required. Actually, it wasn't quite the sacrifice the law required. The sacrifice that the law required was a lamb. But it says in Leviticus chapter 12, verse 8, if she cannot afford a lamb, she is to bring two doves or two young pigeons. Mary couldn't afford a lamb. Jesus' parents were poor. He wasn't born into a middle-class home, even though his father was a skilled tradesman. Jesus was born into poverty. And this poverty followed Jesus all his earthly life. For example, he experienced one of the other effects of poverty. He experienced homelessness. Foxes have holes, he said, and birds have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head. And in Matthew chapter 22, there's a dispute that arises about the tax that is to be paid to Caesar. And Jesus asks, does anybody have a coin, a denarius, a workman's pay for one day's work? Does anybody have a denarius? And somebody produced one from the crowd because Jesus couldn't put his hand in his pocket and take one out because he didn't have one. And the clothes they took from him at Calvary, the clothes that they decided not to rip apart but to cast lots for, were all he had. You know, we turn up in an airport somewhere at the far side of the world, but our suitcase is at the opposite end of the globe, and we're all upset and annoyed because we have to live in what we stand in. And what Jesus stood in was all he had. He became poor. God stepped into the world, not only that he might express the care that he had for the poor, not only that he, through the ministry of Jesus, might remind us that looking after the poor is part of the deal, it's part of the ministry, it's part of what the gospel is about, good news to the poor. But he stepped into the world, thirdly, so that he could totally identify with the poor and become poor himself. Maybe that's why Paul wanted to help the poor. He keeps coming back to it in his letters, the offering for the Christians in Jerusalem who've been impoverished because of the conditions of their life there. And he says in the letter to the Galatians, you know, that when he met the apostles, that's all they were concerned about. You know, they encouraged him to do various things, one of which was to care for the poor, the very thing, Paul said, I actually wanted to do myself. Maybe Paul was so keen to care for the poor because one of this world's poor was Jesus of Nazareth, your Lord and mine. What can we do about this? If you're moved at all by this, if anything about this cries out to you as being a word from the Lord, what can you do? Today is Tear Fund Sunday, and today actually ends a week of prayer that Tear Fund are doing. And normally on Tear Fund Sunday, I give you envelopes, okay? And I say, put money in the envelope. Well, you could still do that if you like, but I haven't got any envelopes today. So I want to offer you the chance to do something totally different. All across the world this week, in different countries and at different times, people from different nations have been crying out to God for the poor. Today's our chance. I'm going to ask you to pray. And there is one thing that is common to the whole of the world, wherever you live and whatever are your basic human circumstances, which is that the sun rises and the sun sets every day of the year. Well, unless you live somewhere up near the North Pole at the moment and you're experiencing the Northern Lights, okay. But basically, for most people in the world, the sun rises and the sun sets every day. It certainly does in Northern Ireland. And one of the things that Tear Fund have suggested we might do, that Christians all over the world might do, is that at sunset each day, we might stop. Now, of course, that sunset will be at different times across the globe as the earth turns towards the sun and away from it. That at sunset, we pause for a moment and we ask God to help us become part of the ministry to the poor. The sun sets in Belfast tonight at 6:09. 6:09. I want to hand out a challenge to all of you who are here in church today. My challenge is that tonight at 6:09, wherever you are and whatever you are doing, stop. Turn the TV off. Stop doing whatever you're doing and pause for a moment in prayer. In church tonight, in this auditorium at 6:09, we'll be doing that. So even if you've got a cup of coffee in your hand before the evening service, you're going to have to stop talking at 6:09 for a moment or two and wait in the presence of God and ask Him, Lord, how can I become part of your ministry to the poor? I don't know what God will say to you. I don't know what God will say to us as a congregation. But I know that if we keep this tryst with one another tonight at 6:09, God will definitely say something. And He will give us a way whereby we can exercise that ministry that Jesus came to encourage us to do, that the Father's heart has longed for from the beginning of time, that Jesus Himself became poor for you and me. 6:09. Let's make a start.